And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. So let's get started.
Too many teardrops for one heart to be crying. Too many teardrops for one heart to carry on. You're way on top now since you left me. You're always laughing way down at me. But watch out now, I'm gonna get there. We'll be together for just a little while, and then I'm gonna put you way down here, and you'll start crying 96 tears. Cry, cry. And when the sun comes up, I'll be on top. You be right down there, looking up. And I might wave, come up here, but I don't see you waving now. I'm way down here, wondering how I'm gonna get to you, but I know now, I'll just cry, cry. I'll just cry. Too many teardrops for one heart to be crying. Too many teardrops for one heart to carry on. You're gonna cry 96 tears. You're gonna cry 96 tears. You're gonna cry, 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 cry now. You're gonna cry, 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 cry 96 tears. Come on, let me hear you cry now. 96 tears. Woo! I wanna hear you cry night and day. Yeah, all night long. 96 tears. Cry, cry, cry. Come on, baby, let me hear you cry now. All night long. 96 tears. Yeah, come on now. 96 tears.
Well, Patty Quatro, we are back after listening to the replay episode that you and I did with your sister, Arlene. And I don't know about you, but I think the replay was important for either those who have heard it or had heard it, or those who haven't, because I think on the heels of the episode we did before, which was the entrance of Arlene and the departure of our beloved Nan Ball, that this doing the replay with Arlene was important because she gets to tell us what it was like to join the Pleasure Seekers. She got to talk about being a mom and that she didn't feel very hip and what it meant for her to join. And there were so many wonderful nuggets in that episode. So I thought it was important. But there's one thing that you said about your sister, and I believe it was on episode 15. But you described Arlene joining the band as, you said, she was like an onion. And I would like you to talk a little bit more about this metaphor and what Arlene's entrance meant to the band, because her entrance was so important for the transition and transformation of not only herself, but also the band, the Pleasure Seekers. So hello, tell us about your sister being an onion and anything else you want to say.
I'm telling you, it was like having her join gave her back a piece of her life that she had missed. Talk about peeling that onion. The bottom line was she married her high school sweetheart. This was a buttoned up era. The girls, you know, they finished high school, they got married, they had a family. That was what was expected of women. She felt right in with that. You know, that was a woman's lot. So the dictates of society in that era were just so strict in what was expected. And during doing the female band, we were bucking the norm completely. She basically peeled that onion of so many experiences we have between high school and beyond. You know, she didn't go to college, nothing. She just got married, had three kids. So it was a huge revelation for her and a learning experience. And it did ruin her marriage eventually. They were like brother and sister. A lot of love, but she realized something's missing here. You know, what did I miss? So it was sad, you know. But he was a great guy. The family loved him and everything. It was just too bad the way it turned out. She said in later years, I never should have divorced him because she had five marriages, always looking for love, you know. So she had her own story to tell. And she told it in that episode how it happened that she came in. That's the truth of it.
It's the truth of it. And I also think, even as you said, bucking society as female rockers, and that she was pigeonholed in the society and she shouldn't have gotten married so early, but yet maybe she should have stayed with Leo. But I do think, and we talk about pillars a lot, and in this case, anchors. Your father, I think, was the person. And this is, you know, the patriarch of the family. I'm using old school words here, who could have absolutely prevented you to going into this life. But he not only encouraged you because of it being the family, business, music, but he made sure that Arlene, even as she started to get as far away from music as possible, he brought her back in. And so I just think that's fantastic. And the other person that we brought up, speaking of Leo Fenn, the previous episode before we did the replay, but also we heard from Arlene on this, is that you brought him on board because, again, your father felt it was important, considering that you were now being booked outside the state of Michigan. You were being asked to go on international tours, whether you could because you were too young or not. But the band, this is a pivotal moment. And so I would like you to just, for the listeners, remind us again, Leo is married to Arlene at the time. He came from zero management background, but somehow your dad thought he would be appropriate, maybe because he was within the family, so it would be a very comfortable chaperone. But I'm curious, from your th historic third eye that you have, why your father chose him, Leo.
Well, I think you need to remember that we were not even barely out of school days. Susie was still in high school. And the bookings were escalating so damn quick as word got around. I know my dad felt we needed some protection. I mean, we were still young teenagers, you know? And it was as simple as that. He thought it was the smart thing to do, and he was convenient. Again, the Quattros go for convenience often with our picking choir girls all the time. Dad picked someone in the family that he could trust, not some sleazeball that's going to look after his precious children and his wife. It was a smart thing to do, and he picked it up very quickly.
Well, it
You'll
was.
see in the next few episodes, he did a lot to escalate us. Leo was important.
Yes, he did. And I do think your father was very smart in that. And I also think, as Arlene said, your father being so supportive of Arlene, of all of you, that bringing Leo in was not only a family thing, but it also helped to bring in income to the Fens at that moment when they needed a little bit of help. Your sister said that this was a way to bring in some money. And again, I just think it's the music was the family business.
And just imagine what that took for dad. Mom and him were going to have to take over watching the kids at times when we were on the road. Certain times when we first started and went to New York, etc., we took a nanny that stayed with the kids. They took them on the road. But then it had to change because we got so much touring going on. So just that escalation produced a lot of events that changed things in many ways as we continued on.
Well,
Which
and
is
just to clarify, in case anybody hasn't listened before, when we say took these kids on the road, these are Arlene and Leo's kids, three kids.
three
So,
kids, young kids,
young kids. Well, the other bit of historical trivia that you and I talked about in the last couple of episodes, I guess this was totally new to me, was Arlene and Leo's neighbors, but most especially Jim Hawk. And I do want to underscore this because we're going to start talking about the costuming of the pleasure seekers. And that's why I think Jim Hawk, who, in your words, you think he's one of the first people to incorporate light shows into your sets because he was so inspired by your music. So A reminder, this is 1966. The psychedelic scene is new and emerging and taking off. And Jim Hawk was at the fore of this, and he was inspired to be at the fore of this because of the Pleasure Seekers. So
Yes.
I just would love to hear anything more as we're now moving into the psychedelic era and taking you on the road with these light shows and everything you were experiencing.
The fans loved it. It was a new element that had never been done before. So all of a sudden, here come the Pleasure Seekers on a gig, and we have this light show going on. And Jim was so handy. He built the whole damn thing himself. And it was amazing. And then when he started incorporating us in it in slides, I mean, how could you make it any better? And then bands started copying it, and it went all over the states and, the ballrooms. That became a huge element of every single concert at the ballrooms with Sherry McCormick and Gail Parento. It all started with Jim.
Well, talk a little bit about this. I'm curious visually. When you say you started to incorporate images of you, you're talking slides of you while you're performing live?
Pictures. He would insert them in with the psychedelic stuff. He just made a whole show of it. And it grabbed people's attention as much as the music. It was just really cool to have that behind us. We were the only ones that had it.
History again. This is just
Again in the making.
incredible. It really. Detroit, well,
Detroit proud.
really is a magical city. Well, speaking of the fans loving you, and I can't even imagine being at these early shows of yours with this early idea of a light show. But we spent a few episodes on a piece of press that spoke of the band's first release of your single, and this included the fantastic response of the journalists and the DJs and their response that you were not only a up and coming fantastic teen band, but that you guys were really on the trajectory for great success. And you and I concluded the press by reading something that you, and remember you were known then as Pat, that revealing something about, I thought this was interesting. You were asked in the article what it was like when people see you live, and you used the word to me after the fact that you think you were being very diplomatic with Mary Jones Schmidt, who was the PR lady, because she was saying, asking you what it was like being an all-girl band and what the audience response was. And you basically said, oh, it was fun and we walked in. And I mean, I'm totally paraphrasing here. No big deal. But you said to me after reading that, that you were being diplomatic because you said you, Susie, and Arlene, you said, especially Susie, used to love walking in to a gig and seeing these kind of skeptics, even if they'd seen you before because you were an all-girl band, and your words sticking it to them after playing.
Absolutely.
And so one, but why, the reason why I wanted to bring this up is press is such a big deal for those who may not have grown up in the biz. And oftentimes, press, whether you're being diplomatic and not saying the truth, or whether you're literally putting out a lie or some kind of gossip to get people to listen, in today's words, we'd call it clickbait. But back then, it was more about, starting a rumor. And one of the press that I read, and I wanted to ask you if this was an example of this, or if I'm busting you again for being wrong about the guys you dated. No, I'm kidding. But one of the
God.
press that I quoted, this is very different than what we read before, but it was also from 1966. I don't know who the author is, but it says, quote, Valentine's Day means the release of their first record to the Pleasure Seekers from Grosse Pointe. Their record for the Hideout label is, quote, Never Thought You'd Leave Me. Close quote. They still play parties and hops on the weekend. Pat says, it doesn't bug us, said band leader Pat Quattro, excuse me. And then you go on to say, Pat, all those cute guys, we can't flirt on the job at all because their dates get mad. But after work, we can. Close quote. This is so like teen magazine kind of stuff. But
Oh my God.
the reason why I'm asking is in this particular question, but I wanted to let you take this a little bit further because you have been dealing with press for decades now, correct and incorrect, usually incorrect or a little bit in between. So, was this you having fun for the press? Was there truth, a little bit of both? So, talk a little bit about if this was what we have now called branding of the band or you as the leader. What were you thinking?
It's funny because we had gone through my brother being a national TV star, a lot of press in Detroit and stuff. I had, by that point, I hadn't fallen off a cabbage truck. I understood, and the education of my father and watching Mickey's press, we had a bit of PR knowledge that there was going to be a dance to do, to make it interesting. We could fun with it. I mean, I was serious Padelot, but I also wanted to do the clickbait, all of that. It was just fun. I tried to include a little bit of it in different interviews. As time went on, I got a little better at it. I was, filling my space too of how to be a leader and how to present our brand. And I didn't want to come off conceited, but I wanted to come off in many different ways that they could pick up and write about. So I did. I started doing that.
I think you actually really found that balance early on. I mean, again, this is you're 17 because it's tease enough, but you're not, I don't know, it's already a perfect blend. I'm not articulating myself well, but yes, I agree with you 100%. And so the article again, and we did listen to both singles off of the Hideout label a few months back. We listened to Never Thought You'd Leave Me. And we listened to What a Way to Die. And if you haven't listened to the episode, please go back because we talk about how it came about, how Dave Leone from Hideout asked you to do it, how he wrote it. That's not what I want to talk about today because Patty, you have given us an extraordinary gift. And that is you, the band leader of the Pleasure Seekers, finally, decades later, got to produce Never Thought You'd Leave Me in the way you envisioned it. And since we did say goodbye to our beloved Nan Ball, who did the vocals on this song. I thought it was important that we again, this is a complete world premiere that we're listening to a Patty Quatro produced remix of the Pleasure Seekers' Never Thought You'd Leave Me. But I want to also hear why you felt it was important to remix it. I mean, this is again, decades later, it stuck in your craw somehow. So let's listen to it, and then I want to hear from you on the other side. So, Patty, you obviously have heard this remix. You worked on it. You produced it. So, what are your thoughts? Are you happy with it? And I just want to give you now the stage and talk about why it was important for you to remix this and re-release it.
Okay, well, first of all, we didn't really remix any of the tracks, but the original, when I would hear it through the decades, it sounded to me a little bit like it was on speed. It was too fast. And it bugged me and bugged me and bugged me as time went on, because you develop your opinions about music and everything, you know. And I didn't realize that until later when I started doing the retro versions of our legacy. And it can be a real personal thing as you get involved into production. Everyone hears something a different way, different ears, and that's okay. I've had a lot of good success in using my ideas on various projects. But to be frank, me and my musical sisters for years have had differing opinions on all kinds of songs, and we're very critical. The Quattros can be extremely critical on music. We hardly ever agree, even now in later years. I'll give you a hilarious example. Susie went to England with her famous producers, Chin and Chapman, and they shoved her voice way up into this higher register. Huge success. I mean, who can fault them? They said, oh, it adds excitement. She had a million hits off it. Me, here I come. No, that doesn't sound like Susie. I like her lower register. We disagreed forever, but they got the hits, you know. So it's really about what you want to do and how you hear it. And that's okay. Everybody has their right to hear something the way they want to. And that bugged me enough that when I made the YouTube channel, I wanted to slow it down just a tad. And I'm real happy that I did that for the channel.
So you're happy. I love it. I love this version. I think you're absolutely spot on how the song should have been put out. I whether it was because it was recorded at the Quackenbush Brothers long ago and it didn't retain whatever, but I love your version of it. And I just wanted to clarify something, Patty. You already know this for the listeners. Every song that we play on season three, unless it's a pleasure seeker song, which is obvious why we're playing it, is because it was a song that the pleasure seekers covered. So you and I have very intensely and intently cherry-picked each song for the episode so that they go along with what we're trying to say. I also want to say that I am very particular and steadfast that except for this remix, because it was produced by you, one of the band members of the Pleasure Seekers, since we are going back in time for this season, I like to make sure that we're listening to it the way you would have heard it. So if it's mono, if it's whatever it is. So I wanted to clarify that, including this on this episode, we opened up with 96 Tears, another homage to
Oh
Nan Ball. But this is Question Mark and the Mysterians, who also happen to be Michiganders like you. And this song came out in 1966. And I know that you not only saw them, you played with them. So I would love to hear some anecdotes about the Pleasure Seekers and Question Mark and the Mysterians. Anything you want to say.
We definitely played with them. I can't tell you how many, but we played with all the Michiganer bands. And oh my God, that song had such a great vibe to it. And the minute I hear it, I think of Nan, you know, and her leaving the 96 Tears, you know, it just comes to my mind. The fabulous organ sound. Oh. And we played that song. We did it in our set all the time. I think Nan might have sung it. Makes me remember Pleasure Seekers rocking that song with Nan when you play it. And it was very popular. Oh my God. One of the Michigan's coolest vibe songs ever. It'll always be remembered. And they were from the Saginaw area, Saginaw and Bay City. And there was a controversy about the organ sound, right? For a long time, it was, oh, a farfisa. That's what they used, a farfisa. No, big controversy. The guy brought, we had heard this, he bought the farfisa to the recording session to use it because it gave that cool organ sound and it had a buzz in it. There was something wrong with it. And so the record was recorded with a Vox Continental, not a farfisa. And to this day, there's arguments. Oh, no, it was a farfisa. It's hilarious. But you know, not true.
Well, you heard it here first. That's hilarious, this infighting about this. But Patty Quatro heard from the mouth. I love it. I love it. I have to say, Their band name is one of the first kind of proto-punk band names.
Yes.
And I love the way it's spelled. I mean, that to me, it's very psychedelic to not overuse a word, but I loved it. Well,
They were great guys. Great guys. We liked them. Yeah, we had fun playing with them. I don't know how many gigs we did, but we did a few with them because there were all but in Michigan, there were so many complex shows, big ones where they had a number of bands and stuff. So it happened a lot. Michigan was big on that.
Well, again, Michigan, Detroit, we love you.
Yep.
Well, if it's not obvious, I am having a very difficult time letting go of our beloved Nan Ball. And let's just say that she will always be with us in spirit because we are now moving on from Nan having left the band. We do have some stories about her in the later 60s, which we will get to, some more salacious little Nan stories. This is why we love her.
Oh my God.
But it is time to now move forward with the Pleasure Seekers and this new dynamic band lineup. I mean, this would become the lineup that would take you to the next level, to being signed, to going all over the country, to really taking it to the next stratosphere, along with Leo's management skills. I mean, this is it. So
Yep.
to set the stage again, as I like to do, it's 1966. This is late now, 1966. And it's in the band, the Pleasure Seekers. It's you, your sister Susie, your sister Arlene. We have Arlene Bidlingheimer, AKA the Lady Godiva. And now we have Darlene Arnone coming into the picture to take over Nan's place as a drummer. And so, Patty, tell us about Darlene Arnone.
Okay, well, just to finish, Nan was my heart. First girl in the band. Always will be. Her personality, her beautiful, fun, popular as hell, great singer and drummer with a huge love of music. We were playing that last gig at the Autorama with Nan in the Monkey Mobile, all of us. And it was like, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 days long, these big extravaganzas in Detroit, the car things. And she was playing with a band called the Lorelais. It was another girl band in Detroit. There were probably 4 or 5 of them. And it featured music always in these Autoramas. It was a big deal to have the music element in it. Darlene had played earlier in the day, and she was talent personified. Mad skills on drums. Her uncle was a drummer, and she started playing drums at 11 years old, taking lessons from Doc Meyer, my dad's drummer, and the same one Nan was taking from. Okay. But she had years on Nan because she started so young. Oh, geez. She was already playing in bands, and she had a knockout voice. Her band lived further away from her, the Lorelais, so it was tough practicing, okay? And we were close in the neighborhood, which made it easier. When Nan had to leave, I just knew when I heard Darlene, I knew she was our future, and I had to steal her away. I got a card from her grandma, who was terribly excited at the prospect of Darlene joining the Quattro family's bands. Because we had the reputation already, right? And she was like my dad. We had the two Svengalis, my dad and Grandma Arnone. Oh my God, she was a force. They both helped orchestrate. She was a strong woman who looked after Darlene's career completely. And she was a former showgirl
Well,
in.
wait. I want to hear the showgirl because this is the story I love. But I want to get back to Grandma Arnone, who is like the, Grandma Svengali of your dad being Papa Svengali. So she's
Right.
orchestrating Darlene's career and seeing this idea of joining the Pleasure Seekers. But one of the things that I've noticed in some of the PR shots that you've done is that Darlene is playing two bass drums. When she was in the Lorelais, was that also the case? I mean, that's a huge drum kit for her
No.
brought in. So that
No.
was all brought in. Tell me about how that happened.
She was not playing two bass drums yet. However, it was very quick. I can't tell you the exact date, but she had been heard about by Slingerland, and she was offered a sponsorship And she started on the two bass drums. And as far as I know, I don't know any other woman at that age, teenage, not even out of high school, that was offered a drum scholarship, sponsorship. Okay. So it was pretty an amazing thing. I mean, Darlene was a huge draw in the Pleasure Seekers as she started. She fit right, and she just bombed right in so quickly, and she learned everything so quickly. The fan fave at gigs, people loved her. She would drop jaws as she did like a long, long drum solo on double bass drums. Amazing talent.
Well,
Amazing.
I can't wait to talk more about Darlene because I think she is such a tasty drummer, and I think she brings such an incredible sophistication to the Pleasure Seekers that is not at all a diss on Nan. It's just now the band is becoming a different band. So we just have to run with that.
She had more chance. She started when she was a young kid. I mean, that's normal.
It
Nan
is.
would have gotten there. She wasn't playing all that long. I remember Darlene's first gig. She became known as Thumper. And our future fan club had a nickname for all of us. Her
Which I
first,
love. Okay,
yeah,
because I want to get to that.
Thumper.
And you just gave it away. So, but that's okay. So it
I'm
was
not saying the rest of them.
no, I want you to. I want because I only refer so Darlene Arnone became Dar Thumper, because she was the drummer. And your sister Susie became Susie Soul.
Oh, real quickly.
You and I love yours, I have to say. You became Patty Pleasure.
Oh, God.
And so Arlene was, remind me who Arlene was, and Eileen.
Foxy lady.
So she was Foxy Lady, and who was Eileen? She was
Eileen Biddlingmeier was Lady Godiva.
Godiva.
Yeah, it
So
was a
go
she.
on about Dar Thumper's first gig with you.
Her first gig, believe it or not, right after Nan left, right? This is November 18th, Carnaby Street Fun Festival with Dick Clark and his cavalcade of Mod Stars. And also on the bill, okay, here you have the Yardbirds, the Velvet Underground and Nico, Gary Lewis and the Playboys, Sam the Sham, the Pharaohs, Bobby Hebb, Brian Hyland, and wait for it, wait for it, the Pleasure Seekers. Who won an award at the end of the show?
What? Talk
Yes,
about this.
we won an award on the Dick Clark show. It was hilarious. And we also played in Canada with Sam the Sham, and we played with Ike and Tina. This is all going toward the end of 66. I remember playing with Ike and Tina and watching her demeanor in the dressing room. This is when they were going through their hell. And she was being abused, and how I remember how quiet she was in the dressing room. What a sweet woman. And they were so freaking good. So, this is all leading up to our final gigs of 66, and Darlene was right in there. It's hilarious to me and a bit ironic because we had nanosecond Sherry Hammerly, who was out fast, and nanosecond Darlene, who was in the Pleasure Seekers like she had never. Not been there. This is how quick and talented she was. We were thrilled and we got lucky with Darlene.
Give the stars above for your love, for your.
give you diamonds bright. There'll be days that will excite. Make you dream of me.